You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio and Holistic Health News, where you get the latest on medical cover-ups, government malfeasance, toxins being put in our food and home, as well as sound, clean eating principles. We are here to cast a light on what the big sick care industry and its government shills don't want you to know. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now on a long, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth. Here's your host, Gregory Luna.
Hello, everybody. This is Gregory with Holistic Health News. I hope you're doing well today. Today, we're going to talk about what makes you happy. And we're going to profile people. Yes, the TSA would be happy with us. We're actually going to do what everybody does every day, which is size people up and profile people. But in this case, it's okay because we're going to profile people based on how happy they are. And Psychology Today has a study where they have figured out what age, sex, occupation are the happiest people. Yay! And which are not. Wah, wah. So let's get started. If you were introduced to a random group of white-collared workers and offered $1 million if you could select the happiest person in the ROM group, what kind of person would you pick? A man or a woman? Married or single? Children or no children? According to a new survey released this month, your odds of winning the cash would increase if you skipped any 40-something single female professionals and focused on the middle-aged male managers with one child at home and a wife who works part-time. In its Office Pulse survey, Captivate Network, a media solutions company, says it's uncovered profiles of the happiest and unhappiest workers. And here it is. Happiest. This is the quintessential happiest person, according to this study. They're going to be male, 39 years old, married, household income between 150 and 200K, in a senior management position, one young child at home, not a teenager because teenagers will drive you crazy, one young child at home, a wife who works part-time. And who is the unhappiest? Female, 42 years old, unmarried, and no children, household income under 100K, and in a professional position like a doctor or a lawyer. Interesting. So let's review this again. Happiest, male, 39, married, $150,000 to $200,000, senior management position, one young child at home, wife who works part-time. Unhappiest, female, single, 42, makes under 100K, in a professional position, doctor, lawyer. Even though it is hard to see a doctor who makes under 100K, but I understand that this is kind of, a lot of these aren't necessarily consistent, but this is the all kind of the greater themes that are running through these. So let's analyze this before we continue. Male, 39 years old. Okay, so we've talked about sexual market value in past intersexual dynamic episodes. So he's 39, she's 42. What's the difference? There's a load of difference between a man turning 40 and a woman turning 40. If you look at the sexual market value graph, which we've quoted here quite a bit, a man is reaching his peak sexual market value from 35 to 50 because his sexual market's defined by what he can provide. Whereas a woman at 42, her sexual market value is like a 1, and it's going even below 1 because her sexual market value is defined largely by her youth and her beauty. And so at 42, she's already approaching menopause. So that explains kind of the age. Household income, it makes sense that you're going to be happier making more money because, look, money doesn't make you happy, and we know plenty of miserable people who are rich. But money does afford you some security that you wouldn't otherwise have. So, for example, you could take trips, whereas if you're making $30,000 a year, you can't have trips. And it allows you to have, let's say, health insurance and pay for medical emergencies or house emergencies and so forth. So it makes sense that the income's going to be higher. Senior management position, you're the boss. You're close to being a boss, so you're not, you know, frustrated and passive aggressive about how you're some lackey. How you're just some schmo, some teacher schmo, and everybody is you're just one of the cog and irreplaceable. One young child at home, I could see that because as I mentioned, older children can be more difficult. So when they're young, like at 6 or 7, that's a cute age. And the wife, then the wife works part-time. I could see that too, because she's part-time at home with the child, and therefore she probably isn't as stressed out. He's making more of the money. Typically women do marry men who make the same or more money than them. So the fact that he makes more money affords her to be able to stay home with the child. She's happy about that. So she just works more out of supplementing his income and more just about having fun at her job if she likes her job. So there's no pressure for her to work. The woman, as I mentioned, she's 42 years old, so she's post the wall, unmarried and no children. This reminds me of an article I read from about Candace Bushnell. So Candace Bushnell was the creator of Sex and the City, the TV show on HBO, with Sarah Jessica Parker, otherwise known as Horse Face Lady. And Bushnell came out recently, about maybe a couple months ago, and she said, and she was recently divorced but never had kids. And she had mentioned how miserable she is because even though she's rich as F, she has no children, and she realizes, and she essentially uses these words, that she's going to be a cat lady the next 30 years of her life. She's around 50. So she's already menopausal, but she never had children. And she's single and alone, divorced. I'm sure she has friends. And I'm sure she probably played up this misery just because it was an article in a magazine. But I mean, to be fair to her, she's being very open and cathartic, and she doesn't need to show that vulnerability. But she's saying, you know, I wish I didn't make this show the way it was. I wish that, because the show, of course, is all about these women, you know, bedding different men. It's like a proto sex positive movement television show that a lot of women in their 20s watched and wanted to mimic their life like that, just bedding different men and never settling down, and to the point where they lost their sexual market value. And it's very hard for a 42-year-old woman to find a quality guy that she wants. And so now she's alone. So Bushnell was saying that. So we, you know, I thought that was pretty revealing. Because if you don't have any children and you're unmarried and you're around 40, you're looking, with the average life expectancy of females in America around 80, you're looking at 40 years of being with cats. And I could see why that'd be depressing. And then in a professional position, this to me is a little surprising. Now, I wonder, compared to two, if you're like a Taco Bell worker, where is the happiness compared to you being a doctor or lawyer? Because you would think being a doctor or lawyer would afford you some things. So if you look at this composite profile, and remember these bullets, so to speak, are composite. So it doesn't necessarily, this is the guy with all these things or the girl with all these things. But if you're a doctor with no children and you're single, you're going to have a lot of disposable income where you can go do things and travel. But I suppose their point is, what's the point of doing these things if you have no one to share your life with? Well, maybe. But with the male profile, I would tell you that, okay, so he's married, but how many men are miserable in their marriage? How many women are miserable in their marriage? So just the fact that he's 39, married with a young kid, doesn't necessarily translate to him being happy. And the sword of Damocles is hanging over him, because 80% of divorces are initiated by women. So this is his part-time wife could divorce him at any time. Now, granted, you know, the woman, if she was married, a man could divorce a woman at any time, but statistically, it only happens 20% of the time. Divorces initiated by men are exceedingly rare. In a press release, the company reported that its survey of 670 North American white-collar workers found men to be, quote, consistently happier than women, quote, both in and out of the office. The results also reveal that men are nearly twice as likely to report feeling balance in their work and personal lives. Men are more likely than women to take breaks during the day for personal activities. In fact, they're much more likely to take breaks simply to relax. Tea break. Is the survey a fluke or at least flawed? I'm not so sure, says Dr. Sherry Borg-Carter Saidi, who wrote this article. A more comprehensive analysis of trends in subjective well-being across several decades came to similar conclusions regarding female happiness. In the book, The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness, published by the American Economic Journal, researchers Betsy Stevenson and Justin Wolfers found that although women's life circumstances have improved greatly over the past decades by most objective measures, their happiness has declined both in absolute terms and relative to men. So yeah, I mean, they have more jobs, they have more freedoms, they can do more things, but apparently they're not happy. There are no simple answers to this gender disparity, but one finding that has consistently emerged from the literature is that women are pulled in many more directions than men. While in the past, men primarily served as breadwinners and women primarily assumed domestic roles, over the past few decades, more and more women have become breadwinners or at least co-breadwinners. What I don't think they expected was that even though they were bringing home more of the bacon, they would still have to cook it if they wanted to eat, along with many other tasks. So let's look at the stats. The Office Pulse survey reported that 56% of women working assume responsibility of cooking at home, so more than half, compared to only 29% of working men. And 62% take care of the laundry, compared to only 31% of the men. The survey found similarly large discrepancies between women and men when it comes to cleaning and grocery shopping. I don't think those statistics are that surprising, that women are still doing the bulk of the work. And I think part of it is, like, women, let's not get sexist here. Women are generally more predisposed and wired and have the proclivity to be the keeper of the domestic hearth. So taking care of the home and so forth. So of course they can work, they are competent enough to work, but they're more wired to be the housekeeper, right? It's just like for men. Men are wired to work. Their value, their self-esteem comes from working and providing. Of course they can cook and they can clean, but that's not their forte. That isn't their forte. Just like probably I would say the forte of women is to be at home and taking care of children. Now the feminists listening would of course be irate at what I just said, but I mean, we supplement each other. We complement each other, the sexes. We are not the same. We are not the same. So yes, men can stay home and take care of a newborn, but they're not nearly well-equipped emotionally, psychologically to do that more than a woman. That's a woman's strength, is to take care of a newborn. So look, somebody's got to eat, somebody's got to clean and so forth. So it's not surprising that the women are doing, because I mean, the women are more wired to do it. And I think they also feel the burden and pressure to feel like they have to do it. Further, a survey by the National Parenting Association revealed that 50% of married working women are primarily responsible for meal prep, compared to only 9% of their partners, and that 51% take time off from work to take care of the sick child, again, compared to just 9% of partners. The NPAs also revealed that married career women devote an average of 11 hours a week to managing and executing household chores and responsibilities, which constitutes 61% of the total time spent on these chores in their homes. In short, while women's roles in the workforce have grown considerably over time, their responsibilities inside the home have shifted far less. Other studies have found that the same holds true for childcare. Working mothers do the bulk of it. Making matters worse is the fact that women also tend to worry more than men about the well-being of the family. According to the Center for Work-Life Policy, women are more likely to see a direct connection between the time they spend at work and negative effects on their families. More junk food, more time in front of the TV, less parental supervision. But men tend to blame external factors, the media, bad peer groups, society, for troubles at home. These multiples, often conflicting roles, leave many women feeling as if they're performing a colossal daily juggling act, and it's taking a toll on their happiness, for sure. The Office Pulse survey found that these women are more likely than men to experience stress, headaches, muscle tension, weight gain, and depression. Yeah, I did that episode about five back about how 70% of Americans are on drugs, and I talk about the rate of antidepressant use among Americans, but among women, it's like one in three American women are on antidepressants. It's something like 40 million American women on antidepressants. And a large majority of these women are around this age, 39, 40, 42. You know? Because as much as the feminists don't want to admit this, women are largely defined by their appearance. And so when you're hitting 40, you're pretty much, I've lost your looks. Of course, there are exceptions like Nicole Kidman, but I mean, the wall is undefeated, as they say. Eventually, she's going to lose her looks. There's only so much plastic surgery you can do. And I think since women are largely defined by that, when they lose their looks, it's tough. Because even though women don't want to be objectified, partly they do enjoy being looked at. This is why social media is mostly inundated by women posting selfies. And they want to be, you know, told, oh, you're beautiful, you look great, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So women like attention. Women like, they want to be objectified to a certain extent because it validates that they're still attractive. But they don't want to be defined solely by their physical attributes. So it's not a surprise that they are depressed. And look, they are doing a lot of the domestic work. It's no doubt. I mean, this study says all that. A poll conducted by the American Psychological Association discovered that not only do women feel more stress than men over finances, and the economy, they're also more likely to experience stress-related symptoms like headaches, irritability, and depression. It's funny how they're more stressed over finances, because if you look at the stats, again, the man is typically making more money than the woman. But the woman is responsible for 80% of the spending in the household. So if you guys don't know this, you probably know it anecdotally, that the woman typically is the one that decides what house we live in, what car do we buy, what clothes. You know, she's buying clothes for herself. She's buying clothes for the kids. She's buying the furniture and decorating the house. And the study shows about 80% of consumer spending is either done or influenced by women. So it's interesting that they're the ones stressed out over more of the finances, even though they're the ones spending all this stuff more than the men are. Men as a whole, now, of course, there are guys who buy sports cars all the time, but as a whole are more frugal in their spending. And we know statistically, consumer debt is about 65% women, and student debt's around the same amount. So women are more responsible for the debt, but they're also more responsible for the spending. That's why that's why the debt is more kind of imbalanced on their side. What does all this mean for women? In many ways, it's simple. In many ways, it's not. What I mean is, for the situation to improve, things need to change. If things don't change, women and daughters who follow them will continue to suffer the consequences of chronic stress, burnout, and incapacitating conditions. That's clear and simple. But actually, incorporating these changes into high-octane lifestyles can be quite challenging. First, most people in today's world, men, women, and children, are super busy, so the likelihood of anyone else stepping up to take on the laundry or cooking is remote, especially if they aren't asked to help. Well, I mean, they do have those meal prep businesses now that have really popped up the last 5 years, like Blue Apron, where you hear these commercials all the time where you can have food delivered straight to your house and you just warm it up in the oven. So that's kind of come up because people are too busy or tired to cook. And also, this is why fast food's always going to be around. And this is why you have Uber Eats and Grubhub and all these apps that have food delivered to you. It's because they're trying to make it easier. Also, if the family or couple can afford it, they're going to hire a nanny. If you hire a nanny, this will diffuse a lot of the stress that the woman is going through in terms of domestic chores. Second, most successful women believe that they should be able to do it all. As Christine Hasler wrote in the book, The Myth of Having It All, quote, "Somewhere along the path of the women's liberation movement, we began to buy into the belief that to be an empowered woman means we have to do everything that both men and women do instead of making choices. We have tried to fulfill both gender roles at the same time." Yeah, that's a mistake. That's really a mistake. Men and women complement each other. She adds, quote, "Instead of giving us a tremendous amount of freedom and opportunity, this concept is having it all has morphed into something that excuses putting so much on our plates that we are stressed out, burnt out, and running out of time for ourselves and our loved ones every single day," close quote. But as most successful women know from experience, just because something is challenging doesn't mean it's impossible. If women want to survive and thrive and want their daughters to do the same, we need to start rethinking and reconfiguring what has become a dangerous way of life. Okay, hey, working in a coal mine is a dangerous way of life. Okay. Let's not forget, men have a much more riskier life. We are put into the draft. Women are not put into the draft. We have to fight the wars. Women as a whole aren't fighting the wars. And we do the most hazardous jobs. We're the ones putting up power lines. We're the ones who are working at factories as a whole. So let's not call this a way of life dangerous. Men have much more dangerous occupations. One of the most important things we can do is to let go of some well-intended but misunderstood and often misrepresented ideals like balance and, quote, having it all. The latter, while a seemingly empowering and satisfying endeavor, has turned into an emotional, in some cases, death sentence for many career women as they strive to do everything and be everything to everyone. Well, don't be everything to everyone. Here's the question you must ask yourself. If the pursuit of having it all causes you to be so tired and unhappy or exhausted or miserable, then what's the point? That's right. Achieving balance is another mindset that needs to change. As noted in the book, High Octane Women, How Superachievers Can Avoid Burnout, quote, "If you're going to strive for balance, you can't take it on as a mission you have to tackle and conquer every day. Creating a perfectly balanced scale where everyone in your life is happy because you devoted just the right amount of time to each of them," close quote. There should be no stress and balance. If you view it as a do-or-die mission or all-or-none accomplishment, it will just turn into one more stressor. The key is not to let balance define you. You should define balance based on who you are, how you live, and what you want. If your circumstances require that you take up 70% of your time, do what you need to make sure that at least some of your remaining 30% is spent doing something self-nurturing and stress-reducing. For sure. You got to take care of yourself. Finally, don't be shy about sharing the load. As I frequently remind friends and clients, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. Yeah, that's where you get a lot of passive aggressiveness, right? She comes home and she's cooking. She's like, I don't want to cook. I just worked the whole day just like you. Why am I cooking? And then, you know, she takes it on the guy. And the guy's like, well, I work too. Well, let's just get takeout. Because look, guys as a whole are not the best cooks. And women know that. So it's a lot of times they're like, I'll just cook because your food's horrible. We're not going to eat it. There's no reason that doctrine can't apply equally in the home and at the office. There's nothing wrong with being the chief cook and bottle washer as long as those things don't consume every moment of your waking hour. If they do, you're on a collision course with burnout. And that is a road you definitely don't want to be on. Okay, so this article is more about the married woman who is sharing the load, because it kind of goes off topic, because it really should have focused on just the happiest and unhappiest profile and stick to those and kind of break it down. But on the unhappiest profile, you would think on one level, these women who are single, 42, female, make a lot of money in our professional positions, they would have a very fulfilling life, right? Because this is what feminism teaches you. Feminism teaches you don't need men and you don't need children. So I think this undermines the classic argument of feminism, because the most unhappiest people are women who don't have a man, don't have a child. So these women have it all. They became a doctor, they became a lawyer, and you know, they're not burdened by the patriarchal oppressive man telling them what to do, and that they have disposable time and income. Yet these are the most miserable people on antidepressants. So I think that's a little contradictory. All right, so this is who I think you should blame for the misery. It's really the government. It's really the government. Now, coming from a libertarian point of view that I have, it shouldn't be surprising that I think this way. Now, this is going to ruffle the feminist feathers, but look, I think for most of human history, it worked where the man was providing and the woman was providing for the children, taking care of the children and taking care of whatever the house hearth equivalent was. So what happened was, when women entered the workforce in mass, really in the 1970s, what that allowed big business and later the government to benefit from, it allowed big business to offer less wages, smaller wages, less wages, because now think of supply and demand. Now they had three times the workforce, because women were entering the workforce, so they could offer less money to their employers than they did before. Similar to like here, I live in South Texas, where we have a lot of illegal aliens. And so, you know, they build the houses, they mow the lawns. And so I tell people, like, oh, we couldn't live without the illegals. And I say, well, look, who do you think built all the houses and mowed the lawns for the first 180 years of American history? Well, it was Anglos. It was Anglos, because they used to actually pay a living wage to construction workers. They used to pay a living wage, but then when the illegals came over, the companies just, they could pay them less because they knew the illegals would do the work for less amount. And so when the Americans and the Anglos were like, why am I going to do this job instead of for 30 an hour for, you know, 14, I'll go elsewhere. And that's why you see over here, it's the illegals doing all the housework and all that lower level work. But that was all done by Americans and Anglos for most of American history. So it's the same thing over here with jobs. So now women entered the workforce en masse in the 70s and 80s. So as this study would show you, that women were still doing the large majority of the work at home. So now kids are being put in daycare. So with kids being put in daycare, that benefits the daycare companies. Most of them are multinational corporations like KinderCare. And so it benefited them. Going back to the business, so now that you have double the labor force, or a lot more of the labor force, the taxation base is bigger. So now they can tax more. Now they can also tax the daycare workers and all the side businesses that are surrounded by having now both people work. And now, so both people in most cases have to work because wages have been depressed. And so now you have the man and the woman working, and now especially the women are very stressed and pressured because they have to still do a lot of the domestic work, plus they're working. Now, every woman is different. Okay, I'm not a woman, so I can't speak for this, but some like to work. Some want to be full-time. A lot of women I know don't want to work at all. They'd rather just stay home with the kids as long as the kids are around, and then they might go work or work part-time. But at least it's good to have that option, and there are women who have that option. Women who've married men who make a lot of money, a lot of them do stay home, but then a lot of them are miserable and depressed because they have nothing to do aside from getting manicures and pedicures and maybe doing volunteer stuff for some charities or school, or they're going to Pilates and yoga all day. So, but at least they have the option. And that's why one of the happiest profiles was a man who was married to a woman who was working part-time. So I would tell you that the time where men worked, women took care of the children was probably the best for everybody, because the epitome of a man, or a man gets his value from his work. And I think the woman gets her value from being a wife and bearing children and raising those children. And I know feminists are going to be angry when I say that, but it's true. I mean, that's what fundamentally makes a woman different than a man, is that you can get impregnated and then nurture a child in your womb and then breastfeed the baby and raise the baby. And it's so crucial. If you look at all the statistical indicators of divorced children or children that don't have a father in their life or a mother in their life, they have a much higher rate of everything bad, right? Higher rate of early onset of drug use, sexual activity. The penitentiary rate is much higher. So if you look at men and women, but mostly men who are in jail, most of them didn't have a father, and most of them came from poor backgrounds, and most of them are minorities. And so you look at that, these kids also have harder pair bonding, harder attachment issues later on. And I think it's tough. So what can I say? I would say men, and we've had this episode about, maybe we haven't had this episode, but when you're in college, if you are going to college, you don't need to go to college. You can just get a trade like plumber, electrician. You can be making a lot of bank and you won't take up school debt. But for you guys who are going to college, get a degree in something that's going to make money. It's going to help you in the long run. So like accounting, nursing, engineering, computer programming, architecture, pre-med, pre-law. This is going to make you money, and you'll be able to provide. If you want to get married, you'll probably find a better mate, because you're going to be making a lot of money, and women, based on their hypergamy, are going to be more attracted to you than if a guy who is a history teacher, even though being a teacher is a noble profession. So that's what I would recommend. And for you women, get a degree, but again, get a degree that's going to get you a job. So essentially what I'm telling you is none of you should go into liberal arts. They should just close up that school and all the universities where you can get a degree in history and psychology and French and Spanish and sociology. I mean, you can't do anything with that. And the saddest thing is that is the largest school in all these universities is liberal arts. A lot of kids go into it because they find that stuff interesting, but you're not going to get a job with that. Certainly not a lucrative job. So you're going to have all this debt, especially if you went to a private school. And now these women are saddled with a lot of school debt. And so they feel like they have to go to work, or they have to pressure their future husband to pay for that debt, which puts tension in the marriage, because really that's your debt. That's not your husband's debt. So look, if you're going to go to the university, women, make sure it's in a degree that's going to make you money, and try to go to a state school. You're not accruing debt. And then if you choose to marry, then you have the option, like if I'm going to work, I can at least, it'll be a high paying job or something that you can do from the house. So you have the flexibility to stay at home. If you're going to have children, that certainly makes it easier, because you don't have to put the kids in daycare. I mean, I certainly know a lot of women who make, $40,000-$50,000 a year, and same for men, and they have young children. And when they do the math, it's almost better for the woman not to work if she's making $40,000-$50,000 a year, then go to that job and put the kids in daycare, because daycare is so exorbitant. I mean, you're looking at sometimes $250 a week. It's so exorbitant that it's almost better to just stay home with the kid, and it's better for the kid. So there's really no one to blame for kind of the misery that a lot of people are in. Because I think if you ask most people are not happy. They are not happy. And even though the profile says the happiest are, men who are married, who make a lot of money. Yeah, I would say that, sure, that's probably, that profile kind of makes sense. But in general, I would say that most Americans are not happy. I mean, that's look at the big pharma statistics. Look at how many people are on medications, either for hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes. You know, why are they getting that? Because they're eating too much crap and drinking too much alcohol. Why are they drinking too much alcohol? Or why do people go into drugs and alcohol? Because they're trying to leave their reality. They're trying to escape their reality. Well, why are they trying to escape the reality? Because there's some pain there or some depression there, and they're just trying to leave it for a little while. And that's why they run to those things. Or it's something that they, advice that they picked up in high school when they wanted to look cool. So you look at that, and then you look at all the people that are on psychotropics and antidepressants and anxiolytics and anxiety drugs and all these, and it's the same thing. It's a reflection on society. So as a whole, we're not happy. We are not happy. So what can we do to be happy? Hell, if I know, I'd be a zillionaire, right? I just wanted to do this episode. But look, certainly exercising, having good relationships around you, having a lot of friends, being in nature certainly helps. Try to minimize your stress. Find a job that finds you meaning. Spend time with your children. I guess these are all the cliches, but honestly, I don't have the answer to that. So guys, the website's Naturopathic Earth. Go check out all the articles. There's a lot. There's a lot of food recipes too. If you go to the food recipes, click on the Amazon link and it takes you to Amazon, and anything you buy within Amazon within 24 hours, we get a 2% commission at no expense to you. I need your help. I really do. It costs money to run the website, to run the podcast. It does. So if you can donate anything or just, you know, buy stuff on Amazon through our links on Naturopathic Earth, that would help. Buy Confessions of an Obese Child for $2.99 on Amazon. Just search it. You'll find it. It's $2.99. It's free on Amazon, Kindle Unlimited. Click on the links to our Patreon account and our PayPal Me account. Donate money directly. That would be nice. If you need one-on-one counseling for weight loss, weight management, just tips in general, click on the Clarity FM link, and it's I think it's like $1.50 a minute. We can talk. As you know, we have three podcasts: Confessions of an Obese Child. We're having a new interview coming up of another lady, and that deals with food addiction, of course. And then Holistic Health News, which is the flagship, and then the Essential Oils and Herbal Apothecary. We're winding down on season two. We just did jasmine and geranium. And yeah, we've done 20 oils or so since May of 2019. So we've cranked them out, but we're coming to an end. And so for all three podcasts, please subscribe and share with others and post an honest review. Thanks, guys. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to NPE Radio and Holistic Health News. Visit our website at naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Holistic News Now and at our Facebook page at Naturopathic Earth. Please consider a donation at patreon.com/naturopathicearth. Buy the Confessions of an Obese Child ebook on Amazon or Barnes & Noble Nook. Consider subscribing to our podcast. And as always, please post an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this. And remember, the core belief at NPE, let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. Until next time, music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails.